The name Tara June Winch was on everybody's lips a decade ago when her first book, Swallow the Air, won the David Uniapan, a Queensland Premier's Literary Award for an unpublished work by an Indigenous writer. Why? Well, Tara June was just 20 years old. The book went on to be listed on the New South Wales Higher School Certificate syllabus. It's still taught in schools, and that's pretty startling for a debut novel. And there's a slight irony in that, because Tara June dropped out of high school to begin a road trip that kick-started her literary career. It gave her something to write about. Since then, it seems that Tara June has been on a global quest. She's been mentored by a Nobel laureate. She's backpacked with a baby. She's travelled the world. She's settled down now. She's living in France with her husband and her daughter. And it's at a distance that she feels she can write more objectively, more honestly about Australia. Her new book is a short story collection which she's called After the Carnage. Now, like a bullet, the storytelling ricochets from one part of the world to the next, glancing the UN headquarters in New York in one, a bomb site in Lahore in the next, the suburbs of Paris to rural Australia, and then a man-made island in the Chinese city of Guangzhou.
Living overseas is good for me in terms of my writing about Australia. I'm almost finished a big, large Australian novel, and it's been helpful to be away at a distance and trying to really analyse Australia from a distance, or analyse those people and those particularities that make Australians Australians, but then visiting every, 6 months and then experiencing Australia sort of as an outsider, and everything becomes flooded with birdsong and sunshine and everything becomes fresh again. It's like when you move into a house and for the first week you can see all the renovations that need to be done or the changes that need to be made, and then if you don't do them for 3 months you don't notice it. It's a bit like that with my relationship with Australia. It's better, I find it better for my writing if I'm away. Absence makes the heart grow fonder. I think it is. I have such a deep, deep love for my country, for Australia, and for the geography and for place and for essentially what is essentially a broken Indigenous story. I have a love for the basics and the bones and the things that made me who I am and made what I write about what it is. But I have still been publishing in magazines and journals and whatnot, and obviously been writing this novel and these short stories. It's not a huge outpouring of work, obviously, but I feel okay about it. I mean, I definitely went through a stage for a few years where I was so frightened after experiencing the highs and lows of having a semi-successful novel. But, it's taken me a long time, I guess, to get to a point where I feel I'm okay. I'm a writer, and this is my tool. This is the thing that I can give. This is my small gesture to the world, and this is my job. You don't stay a writer if you don't keep publishing. So I just need to keep working and push through the fear. I feel comfortable traveling, but for the moment, and I have done for years since I was a teenager. I think I was always searching for my story amongst other people's stories, and that's quite reflective in my first book, Swallow the Air, I think, within an Australian context, and also this one. But at the moment I'm really settled. We just bought our first house in the countryside, so in my actual physical life, I'm not travelling.
So you've bought a place, what, south of Paris, north of Paris?
We're southwest, so we've been out in the countryside for a while, and we've just, bought our first little cottage just 10 minutes down the road from where we were.
I remember,
you go.
I remember speaking to you, and it was a very bad Skype line, our interview last year, but I remember the birds.
Yeah.
The trees were just alive. The ambience of that place was just, I was just like, oh, I want to be there.
Yeah, and the new place has more birds too.
But I'm also thinking that France is a particularly hard place to live at the moment. I mean, is that fear part of your life? I mean, the terror attacks in Nice, the Charlie Hebdo attacks, it seems like France isn't the safe harbour that we thought it perhaps might once be. It has so much romance attached to it.
I think generally, in general, people who live in France, they're not frightened. They're united in their grief, but they refuse to let Daesh destabilise life, generally speaking. I honestly feel that. I think Europe is really destabilised at the moment, and for a lot of migrants that have come to France in the past few years, it's the ripple effect is really difficult, especially for friends. And there's friends like in the last class that live in reality, and sort of after something happens like what happened in Nice, tragically, they don't leave their house for days. They're just so frightened to be sort of not attacked in the street, but just not trusted in a sense.
Well, you talked at the top about this kind of journeying in finding your literary voice, in finding your story among the stories of other people. When you set off from Wollongong, did you actually go on a physical journey? Did you go on a road trip? I understand that's part of the kind of mythology of Tara June Winch.
Yeah, there is a mythology of me, isn't there?
There is.
There's a few stories like floating around. No, I left when I was 17 and I sort of hitchhiked and camped out in my tent for a year, yeah, around Australia, and got jobs along the way. And it was funny, my parents sort of letting me go because I was so young and I can't imagine ever letting my daughter go like that. But I think I just had this need in me to be alone and to discover how I fit into Australia as an Australian. I know that seems strange, but that's what happened.
Did you go in search of something in particular? What did you find when you were on that journey?
I did go to Western New South Wales and try to find family. I spent a lot of time in the Pilbara kind of region as well. I was working out there and I made friends that lived in Roebourne. So I don't know, I found... But then I was working in vineyards in Margaret River, which is a completely different life. So I found just this, I don't think I found exact answers I was looking for, but I think I got to know the country a bit more intimately and sort of figure out that where I was from wasn't so bad and this broken link was a part of me and it had its own kind of story.
I said to you at the beginning that I was expecting a novel.
Yeah.
And I was waiting for how these stories were going to be interlaced. And I thought there's something happening here. There's a rippling between these stories. But yeah, alas, but there is something that interlaces them. And I think for me, this idea of what the carnage of the title, and I'm just wondering if you could characterise the carnage in the title. What do you think that is? And does that impose some kind of order on these stories?
I think all the characters through all the stories, whether it's in suburban Australia or, you know, during a bomb blast in Pakistan, I think that they all deal with that the carnage of everyday life, the pain, that the horror, the thing that we all experience, whether it be grief or depression or death or divorce or warfare or prejudice or whatever it is. And I think they all have the thing that connects them is that point after the carnage, that the point where you have hope and you have a sense of life coming full circle, whether it works to your advantage or not, whether it works out how you might have wished. I think all the characters have this sense of overcoming.
There's a scene between them in these stories. I don't want to give too much away, but there is a story set in Guangzhou in China. In Guangzhou, in the story of Ming.
Mm.
who's flogging Australian education to overseas students in China in this particular vignette in After the Carnage, in the sense that she does something extraordinary, highly illegal. Each of the characters is kind of on the cusp of something quite extraordinary, whether it be, and very dramatic too.
Did you like that one, Ming Guangzhou?
Oh, it threw me in the very last clause, the last paragraph.
Oh yeah,
was not expecting that.
It's funny. Lots of the stories came from just an image, just one tiny sentence. And then lots of them were places, strange places that I'd come across. For example, in Baby Island, I literally had been walking around Guangzhou with my daughter Lila, who is 10 now, but was about 11 months then. We'd been backpacking through China. And we're walking through Guangzhou and we literally crossed like a Disneyland-type bridge. And all of a sudden there was this island of cleanliness and green trees and flower beds. It was so strange. It was the strangest experience coming from normal Guangzhou streets, which are full of like crates of persimmons and, you know, people everywhere and cars and chickens and things like that. And then it was just this like tiny island in the middle of nowhere. And I remember seeing this foreign couple pushing a pram, and I'd been backpacking in China for a few months with my baby and had never seen anyone else backpacking with their baby, you know? And I saw them pushing a stroller. I ran up to them and I said, "Oh my goodness, you're traveling with your baby in China, me too." And looked down, there was this little Chinese baby girl with this white couple, and I said, "Oh wow." And they said, "Yeah, we've just adopted." And I started bawling my eyes out. I was like, "That's beautiful." And then they just thought it was very strange, and I said goodbye, safe travels, and literally looked up, and there was like maybe hundreds of couples around just this island. It was a place where all the Americans got official visas for their adoptions. Yeah, it was so strange. Anyway, and I kept that. I don't think I did so much research from China. I don't think I've used much, but I kept that image sort of really burnt in me. And so, yeah, hence that's it went into the story.
So After the Carnage, your collection of short stories will be followed up with your, it sounds like an epic novel.
I hope so. There's a teaser in the Westerly at the moment, the Westerly Journal. There's 5,000 words teaser.
Sweet. And can you give us a sense of what the arc of this? Is there's a central arc or
a Yeah, it's story? A really pastoral sort of four generations of two families set in Western New South Wales. And it's a sort of farming novel. It's called The Yield, but it's also about religion, it's about family, and it's about high and low culture and what we do with the land and what value we place in it. I mean, that's a lot of topics, isn't it? But I think it's going to be great.
Tara June Winch, nursing a cold, speaking about the past 10 years, spent travelling, writing, raising her daughter and finding her voice. Her new book is After the Carnage, a short story collection published by UQP, University of Queensland Press. Her novel, as you heard, is an Australian epic by the sounds of it, and it's forthcoming.
Do you guys have Barramundi here?
This is Mike and Timothy,
Potato Scallops,
the unlikely hosts of a new RN podcast. It's called The Real Thing. Stories.
Intimate stories, scenes, characters, places.
Born of Australia.
We're heading out into the corners to find the real Australia.
The Real Thing.
That's us.
Subscribe now.